Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, BuyerBarn.com. BuyerBarn.com is the world's first online platform for online sales and auctions of farm animals. That's BuyerBarn.com. Don't forget to follow Ask for Football on all social media platforms or sign up for our mailing list at askforfootball.com/subscribe. The show went in a different direction, but it's all good with us. We really hope you guys appreciate checking out the show. But before they get started, we've got to get some business out of the way. This show is sponsored by Craig Oxane, the Vice President of Residential Lending at Draper & Kramer in Chicago. For those of you that don't know, Craig is a member of the class of 1994. He can lend in all 50 states. He's based out of Chicago, and he is one of the biggest VA lenders in the company. He provides super competitive rates. Craig is going to give you the best deal that he possibly can. Friends, this whole mortgage process is super confusing, and with interest rates moving all over the place, now is not the time to strike a deal with some clown who's just trying to make money off of you. Deal with somebody who actually cares. Not a call center, not some random big box bank, or some mindless website. This is actually how the West Point Network functions. Greg is helping us stay in business here in Ask for Football, and we're helping you get a better deal on a mortgage by introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Plus, Craig doesn't charge any lender's fees for veterans. This is true for Navy vets, as well as Army vets, and even those guys and gals in the Air Force. That's a huge saving, around $1,300. If you think that $1,300 is not a lot of money, send that money to us here at Ask for Football, and we will accept it for you. Anyway, Craig Oxane is the VP of Residential Lending. Check him out. The link is on the Ask for Football website, or you can just Google it. Now we're going to roll into the interview. Again, we thank Caleb and Jim for coming on. It was an awesome discussion, and we look forward to bringing it to you. Thanks. Welcome back to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. This is an off-season edition, and we are graced by two Army football alums. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into their story and talk about their transition, how West Point and their career in the Army in Army football impacted them, both in uniform, out of the uniform, and what they're doing today. But I'll pause there. I'm your host, Rob, coming to you from Fayetteville, North Carolina, here at the center of the universe. We got Dano Ikebasa, coming out of coastal Connecticut. We're joined by Jim Zappellis and Caleb Campbell. Guys, how are we doing today?
Great.
Doing good. Hard as well.
I'm just happy to be here, hoping to help the team in the playoffs.
Yes, this will be amazing. All right, so both of you guys are former Army football players. Jim, you're a class of 96 guy. Caleb, you're a class of 2008. Both of you guys were Army football players. As mentioned, we're here to talk about your West Point experience and also how the Fields of Friendly Strife set you up for success in your current endeavors. But I'll pass it over to Dan to kind of lead us through the typical cadet background stuff, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper into your story. Thanks.
Excellent. Yeah, so, Caleb, we've never met before. Jim, obviously, we know each other pretty well, but just to get everybody sort of acquainted, we'll start with you, Caleb. You know, obviously, where are you from? What year did you graduate? Company, branch? Tell us your 5-minute commercial here.
I'm originally from the Texas Panhandle. So I was born and raised on the red dirt roads of the Texas Panhandle, 7 miles south of the Oklahoma border. I'm pretty sure they put a football in my crib from as early as I can remember. And then I, you know, found myself at West Point, and I graduated in 2008. My freshman year, I was in company F4. And then they did I don't know if they do it now, but up until my freshman year, they were like switching every year, or you would switch after your freshman year. You go into a new company. And then I went to B3. Actually, this is a longer story, but I was kicked out of F4 and I was kind of repositioned into B3. But I graduated with, as the Bandits and in 2008. What a ride.
Awesome. Awesome. Jim, you want to remind everybody who you are and where you come from?
Yeah, Jim Zappellis. Was born and raised in Southern California, Canyon Country, California. It's surrounded by footballs just by the sheer mass of people that were playing. Fortunate enough to play for a Hall of Fame coach, recently inducted into the CIF Southern Section Hall of Fame. His name is Harry Welch, who did more with less than any football coach there is. And I am living proof of it. So I'm a product of coaching. My dad was a football coach. He kind of, you know, I was born and raised to play football, similar to, you know, not culturally as much as Texas, okay, but culturally within the family. My grandfather played for a semi-professional football team, Summit Bears, a long time ago, where they got a scrimmage in the greater Chicago area, the Chicago Bears. I think they lost about 190 to nothing, but they got some good reps in. They learned a lot. They were a big mismatch. And so from, you know, my grandfather to my dad to me is, you know, football has been in our blood for a long time. And ironically, I didn't know much about West Point. As far as Army football, I assume they were soldiers. I was one of the West Coasters that didn't receive as much exposure to the academies. And certainly as the time of non-internet and everything else, the first time I ever really understood what West Point football was and Army football was the Rose Bowl Army-Navy game. Because my father was a UCLA grad. I was every other Saturday, I was in the Rose Bowl watching the UCLA Bruins. And when that game came to Pasadena, it finally the light was shown on there. And that was the first time that kind of sparked my interest on, you know, what is that they're doing here and how can I be a part of this type of stuff? So, you know, fast forward to, you know, getting out to West Point. I had a cousin that really kind of encouraged me to get there. He, for all the right reasons, you know, and it was, you know, to be a cadet first and in addition to be able to play football. Started out in H3 Hurricanes. I graduated as an Axeman in A1. You know, the as we evolve through and get a little bit, I think, softer in the monikers, graduated A1 and got a chance to see one of my company mates' sons graduate 2 weeks ago at West Point. So really big full circle moment for us.
Very cool.
Jim, I know you were an air defender. Caleb, what'd you do in the Army?
ADA.
Okay, well, there you go. I guess we're safe from drones, as we were talking about before we came on on the show.
All right, we got some duck hunters. All right, so let's talk about your time at the Academy playing ball. So, you know, what positions did you guys play? Did you get any other offers to any other schools? And why did you choose Army? And I think we kind of alluded to that with Zop's comments. And then what was your favorite memory as a player at West Point?
What was the first question?
So the first question is, what position did you play?
Oh, yeah, it was a position. So our freshman year, my plebe year, it was interesting because we were, I think we're still in like a 3-4 defense. So I was in that whip position. Michael Resnick, if y'all remember that name, he was kind of the, and then there was, you know, he's no longer with us, but Weaver, that was the year before as well. And I just remember looking up to those guys so much in that whip position, and it was a 3-4 defense. It was kind of that in-between position. And that's what I started as. And then my sophomore year, when the defense changed with the coaching change, we went to that 4-3 look. And then I got moved back to a strong safety, which I ended up finishing all 4 years at the academy, or the rest of the 3 years at the academy, playing strong safety. And it was a hell of a position. I know when I got to the league, they moved me down to a linebacker position. And I would say arguably partially the reason why my career in the NFL was radically cut short is the inability to adapt to that position. It was so unfamiliar and it was so different than anything I had experienced before, playing 10 yards off the ball with all that space and having the speed to make up time, to cover a lot of ground in a little bit of time. I loved it. But then being 4 yards off the ball, sometimes 3.5 yards off the ball and playing so much with your hands, that was just so foreign to me. And it was just a really hard adjustment. But back to West Point, I would say my favorite experience playing at the academy, it would be beating Air Force at Air Force.
Nice.
For like the first time in I don't know how many seasons it was, but I want to say I came close to breaking a national record for the amount of tackles in a single game. I can't remember exactly. I should remember this, but I can't remember exactly how many tackles, but it was, I think, close to 20, if not more. Wow. And so just beating them, it was Brandon Thompson, my classmate, a defensive end that forced the fumble. in the last seconds of the game, which we recovered. I got goosebumps just thinking about that. Hell yeah. that forced that fumble. And it was just a hell of a team effort. Mike Vitti lowering his head as he does so, so well time and time again. It was a lot of fun. I hold that memory close.
Yeah, that's awesome. Zop, how about you?
I was actually recruited as a wide receiver, showed up as a wide receiver. Coach Johnny Burnett, our defensive backs coach, he had the California region. He actually played football at UCSB. So he understood the West Coast. He did the West Coast tour. He's a Texan, born and raised. But when he came out, recruited me, when I got there, I think I quickly turned into Zop, come here. Yeah, yeah. All right. we don't throw the ball much. You are now a defender. So I moved to cornerback. I'm primarily a special teamer and kickoff, punt return, all the kind of, the I don't know, blue collar type of work, the third team, if you want to put it. Absolutely loved it. I think the 8 seconds of just getting after it, start to finish on a kickoff, I think is my favorite thing. Yeah. And I think favorite moments, favorite game, our senior year, we were able to close out 4 years in a row, beat Navy. And I think my final kickoff against Navy, stopped them. We had one more play. I come running off. Everybody's yelling, victory, victory. And we all know what that means is defensive backs. Yeah. It's like, get in that nickel, go smash them off the line. I'm yelling, victory. Yeah, we beat Navy again. And Coach Burnett grabbed me by the face mask. He's like, victory. That's you, dumbass. Get in there. Okay, you're the other strong safety, and go get a jam on this guy. And so the final play of my career, I took this guy to the hot dog stand. So he was not a factor. And then to run down and see Donnie Augustus intercept the ball in the end zone to wrap up four straight years of beating Navy, pretty so vivid and special memory to me.
Zop, you remember the last play. Do you remember your first collegiate play?
Actually, no. Blur. I think I was overwhelmed mine. In the moment.
It was opening kickoff against Louisville. And God, the equipment guy, Nick Dieterman, I think that's how you say his last name, a great guy, love him to death. He came in my second year at the academy, but the equipment manager the first year, I can't remember his name, but he wasn't the nicest guy and really didn't take pride in his work because I was wearing a helmet three damn sizes too big for my big ass head, which is hard to do. And I remember running down on that opening kickoff. I made the opening tackle on my first play in collegiate football. And I got up and I tried to celebrate, but my fucking helmet was clear on the side of my face. And I was looking through my ear hole and I started to run to the other side of the field until one of my teammates grabbed me and was like, what are you doing, dumbass?
Yeah. Nice. Same. Nice. So you weren't blessed with Dickie Hall. Hall, the legend,
Dickie Hall was around. He was a legend.
And that right there is, I think one of the rules that I should have known is you make nice with that equipment staff.
Definitely.
Because how else are you going to get them wristbands and get the right face mask, the cage, the kind of stuff?
It wasn't Dickie. Dickie, I know Dickie. He's first class. Yeah, it wasn't Dickie.
We had Moose. We had Moose.
Moose was amazing. Dickie, yeah.
And these guys they were the fourth team of Army football.
Yeah. They don't get enough credit, man.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit before we came on about my buddy, his son is trying to decide between a bunch of different schools. And I wanted to circle back around to you guys with other offers and sort of brought you to West Point. Caleb, obviously the jump from West Point to the NFL is not easy, and it was particularly not easy in 2008. So I'm sure you had some other offers. You want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, interestingly enough, this has changed a lot due to some individuals who are working hard in North Texas to create an ecosystem where athletes in North Texas, like I'm talking not North Texas, Dallas region, I'm talking like the Texas Panhandle, actually get some visibility. Because the way it worked when I was in high school is you didn't have to travel 6 hours north of the top of Texas to find athletes. You go down to Dallas, you go to Austin, you go to Houston.
Sure,
you've got
sure.
a big enough pool to choose from. So in my high school, folks in the Texas Panhandle were often overlooked. So I only had one other Division I offer, and it was from Tulsa.
Interesting.
Yeah, I had a couple of D1 AA offers.
Sure.
And I think there was an element of why I went to West Point. It wasn't even solely because of Division I football. Honestly, like, I loved the game at that point in time in my life. And while the idea of making it to the NFL is arguably, I would say, maybe every kid's dream or a thought that they have at some point if they're playing football. So that was, you know, a thought, but I was kind of realistic at a young age and I didn't think much of it. And I will say, though, what was equally more motivating for me than, you know, trying to make it to the NFL is from a young age, I've always had a really innate and deep desire to do something meaningful with my life, to make a difference, to really contribute in a way that can just serve people well. And I remember when I took my visit to West Point, and again, didn't think that military would be my way or what I wanted to do when I was a young kid. My grandfather served in the Korean War, but that was it to the extent of military in my family. And when I went to West Point, the energy of the academy, the long gray line, the history of the academy, you just immediately feel like, oh shit, I am truly moving into something that is so big, so much bigger than me. And it's so meaningful. It's so impactful. And so I think my desire to go to West Point, yeah, I want to play college football. Yes. You know, I want a really good degree and have a great college and get from a great college, but more than anything, it was a chance to really quench my heart's thirst to do something meaningful with my life. And that's ultimately what I think made me decide to go to West Point.
Awesome. Jim?
Mine was a little different. I think, as you can see, is Caleb is significantly larger and more athletic than I am. Okay, so options were slightly different for Jim Zopoulos. Mine, in a way, is the recruiting process was frustrating to me because it was game tape, you know, and what the coaches could see. Then the one opportunity to meet you, you weren't playing necessarily. Unless you were a blue chip All-American or unless you were a five-star recruit, these assistant coaches were not physically showing up to your game. So really what would happen was, on paper, I was, you know, I exchanged a lot of letters back and forth to Washington State. Threw the ball a lot. I was a, you know, pretty decent wide receiver coming out of high school. And then what would start happening is, we had a blue chip All-American named Chuck Osborne, who played on the Desert Swarm defense, aligned with Teddy Bruschi. Chuck Osborne was an absolute animal. He was right behind Rob Waltrip, if you remember that name, a total dominant nose tackle that could just impose as well. So when coaches would come down to see Chuck, in addition to that, they would say, okay, well, if you got two extra minutes, bring those other guys in. And I was one of those other guys.
Sure.
So I'd walk in at 147 pounds and they said,
yeah,
can you run a 10-5-100? I said, not my street shoes. I'm like, you know, so pass, you know, hard pass. So I think that through that is, you know, I was recruited by the other, I was recruited by small schools, up here in New England. And it was, you know, did you do well enough in school to do that? And then really what West Point did that the other schools did not is they committed to me pretty early. They communicated with me often. I had a dedicated coach in Coach Johnny Burnett, as mentioned. And ironically, we got a chance to catch up 2 weeks ago. I have a, you know, great relationship with Coach Burnett. And for him to really, it wasn't salesmanship. It was an instant connection. I felt drawn to the program. I didn't know anything about the Army, so I didn't have any bad Army habits to break. But it just felt right. I didn't even take a trip to West Point because once they committed to me, I didn't even take a trip. Didn't want to see it. I just said, I'm all in. And I think from that point, it was then reemphasized by my cousin, Preston McCormick, who was also recruited to play football, played for a year. And Preston told me, he said, you're not going to find a better academic opportunity than this because your class size is going to be 18 people or less. They're going to know your bad habits. They're going to fix your bad habit. And that professor's success is dictated on how well you do in their class. And that right there, I think, was the number one thing that said, get me on the bus. I don't have to pay for school. I get to earn my way into a career and to a college degree. And to have the opportunity to walk on there and compete for a slot to play for you know, Army football, that was just such a big deal for me, and really kept me in school, kept me connected. And, you know, to this day, is it keeps me connected with everybody on this call and everybody in the Brotherhood. And I'm going to see them on the links in July at the Army Football Club golf tournament. And I would say very few, I wouldn't say no other programs do it. Very few programs do it like we do it. And it truly is a brotherhood.
Yeah, this is a conversation I've had with my daughter. You know, she went to Manhattan College, and now she's transferring either to probably Vermont or Rhode Island. And she told me, you know, one of the biggest reasons is, she says, you know, you're still so close to your classmates. 30 years later, you go back to the football, you know, watch football game, and that's like the biggest thing that you do, you know, that month. And I want that. And I said, yeah, of course you do. Everybody wants that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's tough. It's not easy to find that out there. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, it's a very unique anomaly, you know, just having the connection. And I would say the connection gets better as you get older. And I think that's one of the advantages that comes from going to the academy and being at West Point is like, yeah, like when you're young and 18, like, oh, the freaking Fat Boys, man, I think they're special because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's how we were, because we were 50s guys. We had to walk to the stadium to play our games on Friday nights. You guys had buses and travel, right? We're literally walking out of the field house up the side of the road, past the freaking Lust Reservoir to play our game. Now they have a whole new stadium, right? You know, yes. So things have changed a lot and it's evolved. But the reality of it is as you get older, like you can see, like those guys were busting their ass just as hard as you were, you know, to make their grades, to play, you know, collegiate level football week in and week out. And it's not an easy thing to do. And like, there's a level that like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it wasn't there. But like, I can respect the game now a lot more as an adult than I did when I was a kid. I was 18 years old. You know, I was young, immature, and just stupid. But, you know, one of the things that's part of that is, you know, what happens after the academy. So you guys both mentioned that you branched ADA. How was that as an experience? Because I know, you know, at that time, the ADA force was going through a drawdown, loss assured capabilities. You know, we're not going to talk about all the changes to the Army at that point. But I know that, the Army was evolving away from that capability. So as branching ADA, there's a lot of guys, even in my classmates, that were like, hey, I'm going ADA because I'm going to be out in 2 years because they're drawing that force down. And I know folks that did that, but did that impact your decision on branch, or were you going, you know, cause like our class, we had a whole bunch of guys that went FA, you know, and the 97 motto is you can't spell fat without FA, and Timmy Booth can validate that for sure. But you know, what kind of paid into that decision? And then ultimately when you started to transition out, you know, was that part of it, your branch and your service, or was it just a confluence of events? We'd like to know more about that story.
Zop, go ahead.
I think it was people. If I was going to spend any amount of significant time serving, it was going to be with good people.
That's good.
The guys that I knew that were going air defense were friends of mine, football players, had a pretty good, a healthy group of football players, one of which Joe Triano, I'll be golfing with him at the tournament. But I think that really is, you know, to be able to openly collaborate about what's this Army career going to be about, you know, what are we getting into? And then, you know, my cousin has mentioned, you know, another grad, he went air defense. His first assignment was over in Korea. He was actually doing his job every single day, you know, readiness, you know, they had to be, you know, radars up and doing that type of stuff every single day. So that was interesting. It was, you're going to learn your job through reps, and there was no different than football, you know? And so to get into air defense branch, ironically, I started out maneuver, loved it. First Brigade Infant, you know, First Infantry Division out at Fort Riley, Kansas, loved maneuver. And so from then I wanted to stay maneuver. You know what I mean? I think, you know, Rob, from your experiences, once you get into that mindset, now you're all in.
Except this is humping stingers for those of us. This is humping stingers around through the backwoods for those of us who, okay.
Yeah, that's right. And Bradley,
yeah, better
you know,
than
Bradley
you.
Fighting vehicle, you know, to go and shoot, you know, 20 millimeter is pretty awesome to maneuver with tank units,
infantry
units, combat teams, that type of stuff is, I mean, it felt like kickoff, you know, I mean, just like you're in it, you know, so that type of stuff grew on me. And originally I was going to be one of the guys that took the earliest exit possible. And nobody really wants to hear that. The recruiters don't want to hear this. Until you get in it, you don't know how much you really love the Army. I loved it. I thought it was one of the greatest and largest team sports there is. And so the longer I stayed in the Army, and my initial entry and being a platoon leader really was the greatest job. That's really what stuck with me and my opportunities, you know, as far as once I, you know, saw Donnie Augustus intercept that ball, my mind changed straight to the Army. You know, that was the end of football for me. My transition was focus on your next career. You know, I was engaged at the time. I got married 2 days after graduation.
Wow.
You know, and so my wife and I, 2 days after graduation, were all focused on El Paso, Texas, and then got to stay 20 years and have a Army family and a family. And it was something pretty significant to me that the success, I think, was drawn from being a part of my first unit, which was Army football.
Wow. That's a, that's a powerful statement, man.
No, yeah, it's really powerful. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Rob. Zot, did your wife go to West Point?
No, no. I might have met her in the city at an establishment where they provide adult beverages at a time in which I might not have certification to prove said age, yet they did not ask.
I found a very similar established location, except they asked when I got back to the academy, and it resulted in 120 hours. So,
oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. So that's to me, brutal. Again, lower and under the radar, I was undetected completely. Hey, Zop, what'd you do this weekend? I went down to the city, found my wife. What did you do? You know, nice. It was after the Temple game, ironically, with a bunch of football players. Go figure.
So,
Caleb,
good.
How about you? Because you know your path was a little bit different coming out of the academy. But
wildly different. But Zop, I love hearing some of your story, man. I appreciate you. My reasoning behind ADA was similar to Zop's people. Some of my closer friends and teammates also went that route. FA was a close second. But as you might know, or as some other people might know, it was kind of irrelevant for me at that time, simply because at that time, you know, the discussions around the NFL draft and being able to play professional football we were having those discussions, and I ended up getting selected in 2008 by the Detroit Lions. And so when I graduated, I branched ADA, but I was immediately going out to Detroit to start off season, or to start the training camp process, essentially. But as so many of you know, literally 2 hours before my first NFL contract signing, I got a call from my agent letting me know that, hey, something's going on. You need to get to the stadium ASAP. And I got to the stadium. That's when I walked in, and everybody that was somebody was, you know, sitting in this room. And then I remember the AD. Oh, why am I drawing a blank on him? The AD of Army football, or of West Point, was on the phone. And that's when he, Kevin Anderson, and that's when he, you know, told me that, hey, the policy that we put together your sophomore year, the alternative service obligation policy, no longer exists. We have revised the policy. We pulled it back. The strange thing is they actually did this 3 weeks prior to that day. For some reason, they waited until 2 hours before training camp to let me know, to let Detroit know, to let everybody else know that, hey, this is what's going on. And so I went back to I went back to West Point. It was too late to do anything else. So I served, I basically was a grad assistant with the football team for the season. Got a chance to work with Coach, Adam Wall, who I had built a really strong relationship with over the 4 years of playing for him. And tremendous coach, a tremendous man. Deeply appreciate him. And it's just the patience that he exuded with me day in and day out. Like, looking back, I'm like, God damn, you are a strong man for being able to put up with my shit all 4 years at the academy. But then I also, strangely enough, got the invitation when my story was being kind of broadcasted on ESPN, letting the, you know, as the sports world was finding out that I had to return back to active duty. You know, Rachel Nichols called me, and ESPN set up a quick studio. I stopped in Pittsburgh. I had a conversation with them, and then that kind of went all across all of the networks. And it was funny, long story short, my younger brother was born with a rare birth deficiency, and they had his leg amputated when he was, I think, close to three. But now he's a three-time Paralympian, world record holder, ESPY award winner, Just won, or he's getting ready for Paris next year with USA Track and Field. He was sitting at the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista, San Diego, and he was watching me on ESPN, and the man next to him said, "Man, I wish we can get a hold of this guy to get him on the bobsled team." And my brother was like, "Strange enough, I know this guy." And seriously, how it happened. I remember driving back to West Point from Detroit. I did arguably 30, 40 interviews in the car driving. And then I had stopped in Pittsburgh to have that live television interview. And I remember telling my agent at the time, like, "I am done. I'm exhausted. I'm drained. No more." And I kept getting this one phone call over and over and over again. I'm like, "What the fuck?" And my brother texted me and said, "Answer your damn phone." And sure enough, it was the head coach for the Olympic bobsledding team, which there is a policy that allows you to pursue the Olympic sports and also serve simultaneously. So after those 6 months ended coaching at West Point, I made my way up to Lake Placid and started sliding with Team 3 for That's Team wild. USA.
That is wild.
Yeah, and I still to this day, I would argue that is the greatest pickup line I've ever had. "What do you do?" "Like, oh, I bobsled." "You want to ride in the sled? Come on."
I don't know if I could say that. I could just add one quick thing is, yeah. You know, if you said 2008 and I cleaned out my ears properly, as far as when the decision was made, we're unable to, to play in the NFL. The Army Football Club golf tournament was shortly afterwards. And I'm pretty sure this is the weekend that I met you. So this interview here is full circle, and I got to see you having to see people try to rally around you and tiptoe around words and be very delicate with the situation, because we were so excited for you. Every single one of us, every single person that showed up, and every single former football player wanted to show their support, but it was very tough to see a bunch of strong men not be able to find words to say, "We're still with you, but man, this sucks. And I don't want to take you to that place, but you know, we're all with you." And so that to me is my first interaction with Caleb was then. Okay. So it was a quick handshake. You probably didn't realize it because of the fog, what was going on. And so fast forward to this year, you know, Rob and Dan, is I got a chance to engage with Caleb removed, where he was able to reflect and see what type of man he's become since that experience, and to share, the generational divide between, you know, when I showed up and played Army football to where he did in his total different experience, and to be able to connect there and learn more about him as an individual was pretty significant to me, which makes this interview so much more significant, is to bring us both in the same room and saying, there is many, many forms of goodness to be, you know, had from our experiences, our very, very different experiences. Mine were not all rosy, not the same as his. But I think in the end is having this type of network and relationships that are so strong and deeply rooted into where we came from has made me better knowing Caleb.
Thanks for saying that, Zop. It was a hell of a time. It really was, because at that time in my life, I would argue that, and I'm not saying this in like a self-degrading way, but I was really the least self-aware person you've ever met at that time. You know, I operated from so much fear, and I wasn't a whole man, right? There was so much pain in my body. There were so much experiences in my life that have really left a mark on me from my childhood. And from an early age, my ability to cope with my childhood pain was through my performance, was through my achievement, was through my pursuit of more, doing more, achieving more, being more. And so my whole life, I've been told that if I could just get there, and suddenly I'm at West Point and this opportunity comes up and there's all of this internal and also external noise. And Zop, it's wonderful to sit here. You say, you know, like, we were all like rooting for you and surrounded by you, or surrounding you and sending you our love, even though that the words weren't there. Because it wasn't that experience across the board. You know, I received letters with literally a father sent me a photo of his son's casket and saying, like, "You'll never be the man that my son was. Like, you're a coward for going to the NFL. I had pictures of Pat Tillman sent to me time and time again saying he was a hero, you're not. And so it was a very mixed experience for me. And at that time in my life, like I did internalize that my success in the NFL would be the way that I would give back. It would be my battle to fight, my war to win. And so eventually those 2 years passed. I went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. I did my Bullock there. And then at the completion of my Bullock, my 2 years was up. I got the early release and I made my way back out to Detroit. And that was really, and we can maybe, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, you know, when I got back into the NFL and I felt this immense pressure to measure up to all of these expectations that I thought I, around the man that I thought I was supposed to be, or around the man that I thought people expected me to be, especially coming from West Point. I remember Trey Wingo calling me and literally saying on national television, "You're not just an athlete, Caleb, you're America's athlete. You're a West Point graduate, you're an Army officer, and now you're an NFL draft pick." And so trying to live up into that expectation day after day, and the fear that I was swimming in, afraid that if people really see me, if they know what's happening behind this facade of a man that I presented to be, they will see that I'm not as strong as they think that I am. The NFL, that experience, it was enough pressure in my life to really kind of begin to surface all of that fear, all of that trauma, all of that pain. And, you know, I didn't have the tools to hold that well. And I began to cope in really unhealthy ways, and which directly tied into my performance or lack thereof. And eventually, you know, 3 years later, after bouncing around from a few teams, not being able to find much traction in the NFL, I realized, you know, again, I'm sorry if I'm getting ahead of myself, but leaving the NFL, I remember when I got that call letting me know that I was released from the Chiefs, my agent called me and said, "Hey, Atlanta wants to bring you in. And the Canada wants to offer you a contract for a kind of a developmental year. Like, what do you think?" And I was like, my God, I got to walk away from this. I got to go. Mm-hmm. I got to go discover who the hell Caleb Campbell really is, because the way that I'm doing life, the striving, the surviving, the using all of my energy, trying to hold together this idea of a man that I think I'm supposed to be, it's starting to really cost me in a very tangible way. And it's wreaking hell on my mental and my emotional health. And I was really scared at this season of my life that, like, if something didn't change soon, you know, I realized that I was going down a path that it was only a matter of time before my story would be broadcasted on national news. And it wasn't because of football, it was because I was just about to become another statistic. And that's when I made the decision to, like, okay, all of the pain, the shame, and Zop, we talked about this, as my classmates went to war and I went to the NFL, this is something that I have had to work through in therapy for a lot of time, a lot of years, is like, I've never felt like I did my part, and my part was success in the NFL, and I didn't live up to the success that people expected of me, created a lot of internal shame, which was very challenging for me to work through. And again, not looking for sympathy in saying that, it was just been my process, that's been my journey. But Zop, what's been so great with you is that, you know, coming full circle, having a conversation with you, you know, and you mirroring back the goodness that you saw in me even way back then, it's been such a gift. And so I deeply appreciate that. I want to say thank you for that as well.
Yeah. No, if not me, you know, so, you know, heck, I'm 5'7" on a tall day.
Yes.
I knew I wasn't going to get there. Okay. So I got a chance to be excited about the NFL through Joel Davis, you know, our left tackle that was absolutely monstrous, 305 pounds trying to run a 16-minute 2-mile, and he did it in order to prepare for the NFL. And so those are the types of things that we had to rally behind him. You know, I mean, honestly, like, get running, fat boy. If it wasn't for us to be, you know, getting behind him, he wouldn't have got to Indianapolis and got that opportunity to, you know, do things. The NFL Europe stuff with, you know, Jim Cantaloup and Ron Leshinsky, other guys that we played with, is everybody around you. And as much as the pressure you had is 100% support from the rest of the team. So hopefully sharing that perspective. And then again, is being able to collaborate together as a team and draw on each other's strengths to be successful together. That was the one thing that I always saw in you, and just like everybody that's had that opportunity. Colin, you know, Colin Mooney, you know,
so good.
Had himself a great opportunity.
Josh McNary. Took
full advantage of it. Every single one of us is behind you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I don't say all of that in any way. Let me be clear. like me sharing. This is my story. This is just my experience.
Absolutely. You know,
this
for sure.
This was the story behind the story that now I spend all of my time on stages offering this story so that other people can find a glimpse of hope when they are living the facade of a life and they're using all of their energy trying to hold it all together. What's a new way forward? How do we do things a little bit differently where we can not only perform at our best, but we can also be fucking happy in our lives?
I think a lot of West Pointers go through a thing where, you know, I just turned 50 and it's like, there's a reflective part of that. But then there's also, you know, you go to West Point and people, whatever your experience is, people just sort of project whatever it is that they think that that experience is supposed to be onto you.
Yeah.
God, that drives me crazy. I mean, it's fine, but you know, I'm just who I am. Like, former college swimmer. I was in the Army for a while. Like, it's not complicated, but people, they just see that. And it's like, I can only imagine at your level, Caleb, that would have made me insane. Like, literally insane.
Yeah. Like, I would have probably lost it. But first of all, I want to say thank you for all the openness, guys, because I appreciate that. Just the honesty, having these open discussions are very, very important to not only just us as adults, but to future of the program. And I would also say, you know, as a guy who, you know, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, fell out of an airplane a couple of times and all those things,
he was
right?
Pushed.
I was not pushed. I was jump master. Get out of my head. Anyway. but you know, when you look at it holistically, we all have our roles to play, and it comes with maturity to understand that there are differences between the guys that deployed or the guys that got out early or the guys that spent a full 20 years or the folks that are still in today, right? There's a large difference between that, and we all have a part to play. And when you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, there's no way that you can have enough vision to see that as a 20-year-old young man, you know, newly commissioned officer, have this, you know, life-changing event presented to you, and you're like, wow, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be the greatest thing that's happened to me. And maturity comes in. It's like, yeah, that was something cool that happened, but it wasn't everything that I am, you know? And that's one of the things that we all have to do. Cause I know when I retired from the military, and God forbid, it's been 3 years now, but when I retired, I grew up as an Army brat. And when I walked across the stage and I took that uniform off, it's like, man, this will be the first time in 47 years that I haven't been tied to the big green machine. And so it's understanding that those stages of your life that happen and having the maturity to realize it's like, okay, I'm not doing that anymore. How can I do something else? You know, and I think that something else is really, you know, what the difference is between success and struggle is having the maturity or having the people around you to be like, hey man, like, look, you're okay with who you are. We just gotta, you know, we just gotta speak some words of encouragement. And as men, we're terrible at doing that. Like, ah, that guy sucks. Like, he's just weak, you know, and like, that's typical, you know, and some people will say, oh, it's toxic masculinity, or it's, you know, some other flavor of ridicule or joking or whatnot. But the reality of it is like, hurt people hurt. And most people don't realize that until like they go to therapy or they sit down and they have a session that's like the weight of the world is on their shoulders. And then they realize, like, why am I acting this way? And usually the answer is because you have some deep rooted issue that you haven't processed yet, whether it been when you were 10, 20, 30 years old, who knows, but you just don't have the tools to do it.
Yeah.
And so being able to acquire those tools as you grow is very, very important. But I know that we want to talk about what you guys are doing today, because, you know, success comes in different forms. Zop, what's your gig? And then we'll go to Caleb. And then, you know, you alluded to it, but definitely want to talk about what you guys are doing today and how the, you know, the alumni, both West Point and the football team, have kind of supported you in your endeavors.
Yeah, I think it's, if I could answer it two ways, like, what am I doing and why am I doing it? It's what am I doing is, I'm a vice president of business development for a small defense contractor that supports naval aviation. Yes, I said naval aviation. Okay. So to me, is I have to kind of redirect this and say they need my help. All right, go on. The second is, you know, it's opportunity that was born through a very strong network and relationships. And, you know, growing business through learning over the last 6 years, you know, what it is that defense contractors do and how to bring value to the government. And, you know, again, it's like, you know, that whole, you know, the thing about the dirty contractor. I don't know if you've heard it, you know, that impression that all contractors are there just for the dirt, you know, the money. And it's, if the government could have done it, they would have never released the contract. So you need my help. You need that 20 years plus worth of experience in order to bring value to the government and continue to evolve as a military. And so one is, it was a great way to stay connected to the military. I currently work for a class of 1989 West Point graduate. It's trust. I think anything that is worth your time or effort, name, it has to be built on trust. And I trust, you know, my boss with anything. I've developed that relationship over the last 4 years. I work alongside of him, two different companies, and we were both in the business development realm. He obviously did 21 years active duty infantryman, and he's got that head start on me. He had that 7-year head start in this business. So he's been able to mentor me along the way, grow my capabilities. We understood each other. We worked similarly. And then we blended our networks together to be able to grow the current business that we're in down in Southern Maryland. And it's exciting to go to work with like-minded people who want to grow, who want to progress, get better every day. And so for me, it was initially not intended to just say, hey, let me dig into, you know, this academy network or what have you. It happened through the things that we did together. We work hard together. And this opportunity was born. I've been on with this organization since February, but I've stayed in business development in the government space over the last 6 years. And it's been a great career.
Awesome. Caleb, how about you?
I love that. When I left the NFL, I moved to Canada. I, you know, like slept on a basement floor of a boiler room for the next 5 years of my life and just did personal work, you know, started to really understand the driving forces behind my life, trying to understand why is good enough, never good enough, really trying to understand why am I so perpetually dissatisfied in my life, no matter how much I accomplish. I'll never forget. And Rob, you alluded to this about, you know, the wisdom that comes down the road. I was having a conversation with a therapist one afternoon. And she said, Caleb, have you ever considered that when it comes to you finding satisfaction in your life, it has less about what you accomplish or what you do and more to do with how you treat yourself? And I didn't understand what she said. And I started to get angry. And because in my head, what I heard her say is like, you know, you're telling me that ambition is not important. You're telling me all my success and all of my hard work, it's irrelevant. Like all I got to do is treat myself better. And I remember she looked at me and I had tears in my eyes and she had this really beautiful face of compassion. And she said, no, I'm not saying success is bad. I'm not saying ambition is wrong. What I'm saying is you'll never be satisfied and proud of what you accomplish until you're satisfied and proud of who you are.
Mm.
And that hit me. And I realized that so much of my work was really repairing a very wounded relationship with self. And from that, and I say that because from that journey, I've realized on the other side now that I've gone through a lot of pain points that a lot of high achievers or a lot of leaders are experiencing day to day. And that led me to really finding myself on a stage through a random invitation and delivering not only my story, but the wisdom that I've been able to extract from my story and my journey and apply that wisdom to whatever team or whatever leader or whatever conference that I'm speaking at. And so for the last five years this September, I've been a full keynote speaker, full-time keynote speaker at conferences or working with leaders in different organizations. And really the meat of the work is, and Zop alluded to this, like an organization only moves as fast as their level of trust, right? If we don't have trust, we can't actually step into that next evolution of success, because that success actually ends up fracturing us. It actually ends up disconnecting us even more. Mm-hmm. And so like more success is actually, if you don't have the framework or the foundation for it, it becomes problematic. And that's what I experienced in my life. I could not hold the weight of the success that the NFL brought into my life. I didn't have the capacity to hold that. And so, you know, we can't trust each other if we're living disconnected from ourselves, or if we're living disconnected from each other. And so at the root of that work is like, what does it look like to deepen our sense of connection with self? What does it look like to deepen our connection with each other? We can't do that when we're walking, talking facades, when there is no authenticity. toxicity infused in our life, afraid of vulnerability because of the misconceptions we've been taught around it. It's been a heck of a journey and a lot of fun to just stand on stages, deliver a keynote, and work with leaders at different leadership offsites, and helping them really understand that we cannot become what we want by remaining what we are. And then really giving them the tools and the frameworks to facilitate that transition.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so Dana, we'll give you the last word and then we'll wrap this thing up. Like, guys, this has been great. Like, this is a much deeper dive in conversation than I thought we were going to get into.
Yeah,
and
this went radically different direction than I was expecting. Sorry. I have to say, no. Enjoy it. I hear all of that. I'm telling you. Let me just say, you know what? I don't know, Rob. I'll pass it back to you. But I have a favorite thing. I know you're gonna cut the commercial and do some editing here. So let me throw a favorite thing onto the end.
Okay. Yeah. So guys, we really really appreciate you guys coming on. This was awesome. It's great to hear about your story again. I've known Jim for a while. We reconnected a couple of years ago, but like, this is probably one of the longest conversations that we've had, other than about football, you know. And that's sad to say, because like the height of our discussion is usually during the football season. So these off season opportunities are really a chance for us to get to know you better. Caleb, thanks for coming on. It was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
For you to be so vulnerable and exposed, it helps. And there's players and family members and coaches and other people that are out there that can learn from your story, whether it be on the stage or even on this podcast, because we all wear our armor, right? Like, we go out, everybody wears masks for hours and days and years. And, you know, very, very few people get to peek behind the curtain. And then when you do, it's usually a scary place. Mm-hmm. And so being able to have some place that you can do it with, as Zop said, with trust or with people that truly care about you, you know, that's when the vulnerability, and that's when a lot of the growth happens too. So if you can get over yourself long enough to be exposed, and that's for all of us, regardless of who you are, because again, when you're 18 and made out of Teflon playing, you know, college football, like, nothing's going to bother you. At least that's the image that you portray. Mm-hmm. And it's generationally, it's different, you know. Like, we're a bunch of old dudes. People are probably looking at it like, these freaking boomers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're like, these boomers don't know what they're talking about. Like, hey, you know. But there are certain things called trauma bonding. You know, like,
come on.
Like, guys have come together through, you know, sweating out in the locker room. You know, cutting weight for 50s games, or, you know, riding the bus and stressing out or being bummed after, you know, losing the big game or not having the opportunity that you thought you should have had. And I think expectation management is probably the biggest takeaway that I could say for this whole show is, like, hey, look, you can always have high expectations, but always be prepared to make adjustments, because all of us being here, you know, Army people know that the plan doesn't survive first contact with the enemy, and you've got to be able to make adjustments. And if you can't make those adjustments, like, you can end up, you know, finding yourself going someplace that you don't want to. But
well,
I will not end it on a low note. So this has been the Ask for Football Army Football Show. We will continue to beat Navy. We will continue to bring you guys awesome interviews and information about the Army football team. And we will see you guys next time. We'll drop out of the interview, and then we'll run some commercials. But we appreciate you guys coming on the show today. Thanks. Well, it's buyerbarn.com. Buyer Barn was co-founded by a class of 97 graduate by the name of Dan Robinson. Dan ran a traditional farm co-op and auction and realized that there is a better way to modernize farm sales to bring them into the 21st century. Dan and his co-founder Dinu took their experience in IT management and development to create the world's first farm-to-farm online sales auction platform. Buyerbarn.com provides reduced health issues through reduced animal and owner contact, reduced animal fraud through a buyer and seller rating system, a fully integrated auction platform with secure payments, the convenience to buy and sell on your own time, and better market pricing because you get a wider audience looking at your animals for sale. Buyerbarn.com is dedicated to helping the small farmers in America and are providing a special discount to military veterans who want to assist them in the growth of the family farm. Go to buyerbarn.com or email them at info@buyerbarn.com.
Favorite thing.
Go for it, Nano.
All right. So my favorite thing this week is listening to Caleb talk made me think about, you know, dealing with success. And one of the ways that I've personally dealt with success in my own life is by trying to give back to and get involved in my local community. I bring that up because the Swim Across the Sound is at the end of July, which means that all of you have about a month to donate to Team RBG, which is Team Rock the Black and Gold, as we try to beat cancer here in the state of Connecticut by swimming across Long Island Sound, which is obviously not an obvious way to beat cancer, but it is my favorite way. So you can go to my Twitter page at Dano E. Cabeza. And there's a link on there off my link tree to get to our team and donate money. And, you know, let me just say, as long as I've got the platform, I would really appreciate your support. We're doing the best we can. So that's it. That's my favorite thing. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. Tune in next week as Ask for Football brings you more Army football analysis. We'd like to thank our sponsor, FireBarn.com. FireBarn is the world's first online platform for auctions and sales of farm animals. FireBarn is dedicated to helping small farmers in America and has extended special discounts to military veterans who want to continue the growth of the small farming industry. Go to firebarn.com/military. That's FireBarn, FireBarn.com to learn more or to get started. Email them at info@firebarn.com. Thanks again for listening to the Army Football Show. And as always, beat Navy.